Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go. Hello, welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. I am your host, James Mackey. Very excited for today's episode. We're joined by Sanket Merchant. Sanket, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, James.
Let's do it. So before we jump into the topics, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So James, delighted to be here. So my name is Sanket Merchant. I'm a partner at Peakspan Capital. We're a US-based growth equity firm. We've got $1.5 billion of capital under management, active investing of our third fund, which is a $600 million vehicle. I have to pinch myself. I've spent the better part of my career over a decade and a half working with growth stage software companies. Spent 4 years chopping my teeth doing software investment banking. For those who are familiar or unfamiliar with it, it's effectively being a glorified real estate broker. But instead of selling a house or selling a commercial piece of property, you're selling a software business. And loved it, fell in love with the entrepreneurs, business software just generally. And 2016, found a home at Peakspan. And over the last 8 years, which is kind of crazy, and a wife and two kids later, I've had the privilege of supporting over a dozen portfolio partners as their growth partner and helping businesses that are kind of at that startup phase, at 3 to 5 million of ARR, 30 to 40 employees, really traverse that scale up journey, which is how do you get from 3 to 5 to 30 million plus with conviction and confidence. And so my expertise is the scale up journey, B2B software. Within that, I've spent my entire career focused on infrastructure, ed tech, learning development, and HR tech. So I think this is like the best environment for me because I've been around people, organizations, but also the vertical category of software for focused on people and technology for a long time.
Yeah, I love this. And for everybody tuning in, the reason we brought on Sanket is we really want to understand the current VC landscape as it pertains specifically to the tech industry. A lot of executives out there are thinking about strategic planning. They're trying to think about how they're looking at things like retention and growth. And it's definitely a very challenging market. And so I know a lot of folks out there are looking for advisement on how to lead through the challenges that we're seeing right now in the tech industry. So I think everyone would be really interested to hear your thoughts on what's currently happening in the tech industry with the VC market. We'd love to get the latest news out there that the things that you're seeing right now.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And I would say, so I'll just caveat, like my perspectives come from the world of growth equity. And so we think about this as like private capital is an ecosystem. It's, you've got seed funds, you've got traditional venture capitalists, you've got growth equity firms like Peakspan, but also folks that are playing a little bit later stage. You've got the momentum VCs and then private equity firms, right? And we all play at different stages. I would say from my perspective, I think that the two things that I would probably call out is in terms of impact to venture capital as an asset class is one, no surprise, there was a lot of ebullience back in the market in 2020, 2021. We thought it was going to be the end of the world with COVID. What you ended up seeing is the resilience of software. And I'll share this all for the POV of as a B2B software investor, not from consumer or internet or any of these other verticals. But what you ended up seeing is a bunch of ebullience, a lot of funds having to effectively, get caught up in paying high prices to be competitive in markets, right? To be able to put capital to work, to get access and exposure to different asset classes, vertical markets, product categories, et cetera. And as things got harder, as we started to, one, cost of capital increase, we saw inflation, we saw a tightening labor market, and companies struggle to find growth or it get harder to grow as we saw these economic headwinds. It put a lot of pressure on businesses. And candidly, some companies on the barbell, on the spectrum of like, benefiting from the current economic environment and really being, in the hurt locker, I think a lot of companies with discretionary spending on technology kind of coming down because consumer wallets are tight. People are a lot more fiscally conservative. You've seen the layoffs I've seen across the tech landscape. It's getting harder to sell. It's getting harder to grow. And so I think a lot of one focus in the venture capital ecosystem is how do we continue to either triage or support existing portfolio companies that require additional capital, are seeing, are had high burn rates, saw growth decline, are seeing runway on cash kind of contract pretty meaningfully. So how do I support my portfolio where I've got massive capital at risk? I think the other side of it is a supply and demand imbalance, which is as a venture capitalist, ultimately your job is to generate great economic outcome for your stakeholders, right? And that's the job for every investor, whether you're a growth equity firm or private equity firm. And I think the reality is that you've got a ton of capital out there, whether it's committed to support existing portfolio partners or not. So you've got, you know, so some capital is earmarked to support existing portfolio companies. Who knows what that percentage is? The dry powder that is available in market is that's looking at net new investment opportunities in an environment where there's a decent amount of supply, but the number of companies that are crushing it that fit the 2x, 3x, 4x plus growth year over year, you're not seeing that at high frequency or volume, right? And so you have a lot of capital chasing very few, or fewer, I should say, potential investment opportunities. And so what you're seeing is deal activity is slowing down. Some of the large funding rounds are slowing down. You're not seeing a lot of those new flashy $100 million financings like we did back in 2020 and 2021. So I think that's what you're generally seeing here is there's a lot of enthusiasm. Folks want to stay busy. They want to invest new capital. But I think that part of that is a supply demand imbalance. I think part of that also is, you know, I think, you know, trying to correct perhaps some of the impact of not eating well, not exercising regularly that we saw in 2020 and 2021 in terms of just getting caught up with some of the hype in the market. So I don't know if that's helpful.
It is. And I would like to get your thoughts on what's happening like right now, because we've seen this trend in terms of constrictions of the capital market, harder, less access to capital. And that's been happening over the past about a year now. What's been interesting from my vantage point running a recruiting solutions firm working with the tech industry is that we saw a big decline in demand starting essentially this around this time last year. We started to see less demand for our services. And that continued to decline, I would say, through around March of this year for a solid 9 months. Then we started to see a plateau where a little bit of demand started coming back. It was more consistent. We weren't seeing a growth market when it came to hiring, but we were seeing stability and consistency. What's been really interesting over the past month is we're starting to see another dip in demand for hiring, which has been really interesting to see. So I'm wondering, is it just on the hiring front, or companies like are getting even more squeezed for cash now? Like what's going on?
I think the reality is that I think it's a fair question. And I think that probably what you ended up seeing is a lot of ambiguity. I think the market started correcting in Q4 21. You saw a lot of like freaking out what's going to happen over the next four quarters. Let's tighten our belts a little bit. And I think what we ended up seeing, we had one of the chief US economists for one of the largest kind of economic firms, investment banks come out to present to our entrepreneurs. And I think what you're seeing is one consistent kind of pessimistic outlook. That was kind of the consensus across the street to where I think entering 2023 and really at the turn of like Q1 going into Q2, you started to see that sober up a little bit where yes, the consensus was things are bad and it may not get better for a long time. But a view that it's potentially we saw the bottom of it, or the pace of decline is going to slow down pretty dramatically. And so I think what you ended up seeing is that a lot of organizations, as you and I have seen in the past, we see a tight labor market. So I think the reality is that folks probably in 2022, 2023 adjusted pretty deep, but got to a place where they were right-sizing organizations based on where they saw demand at. I think folks are, and what we're seeing across the portfolio, what we're seeing across like the software scale-up landscape is that outlook on growth has not changed. It hasn't gotten worse, but folks are seeing pockets of opportunities. And I think folks are being very surgical around not over-indexing on some of that positive signal data until they feel like the trajectory of the trend line feels more predictable, right? And so I think that probably explains what you're seeing in terms of, you know, potentially some companies who are feeling better, who made some adjustments quicker or earlier, are getting on a, you know, let's get back on a growth trajectory, which means potentially hiring folks. Other folks are saying, hey, we're not going to be doing any risks or reduction in forces, but until we feel more confident in the growth trajectory, we're going to just hold back and kind of slow down. But I do think in this market right now, like when things are tough, like it was really easy, quote, I say that on a relative basis, it was easier to grow in 2020 and 2021 where folks are buying anything and everything, right? But I do think that even across our portfolio, across the companies that we talk to, that we work with, I think in moments like this, there is going to be appetite and demand for proven, durable executives that have been there and shown an ability to execute in both positive and then turbulent economic environments. And I think that demand has never been higher, right? I think that boards are holding teams, founders, leadership teams, management teams accountable to find a way to succeed. And I think that applies to our business as well. Regardless of what market conditions look like, our commitment to our LPs is to find a way to stay on strategy and fulfill the mission that we've set out to fulfill. So I think you're seeing that in the startup ecosystem as well. And my guess is that we'll see some stabilization. We'll see potentially some volatility going into Q3. But my suspicion, and I could be wrong, but my suspicion is that we'll see some stabilization heading into 2024. And so I would imagine we see a lot of what you're kind of monitoring closely pick back up in a couple quarters.
I hope so. Right now, again, through my lens, recruiting solutions, we went from a pretty 50-50 split of working with category leading companies and early stage companies, late stage and early stage in 2021. Every kind of level of growth seemed to be scaling, hiring a lot. Late stage companies were the first to churn due to lack of demand. We had customers cutting 500 person teams and really scaling back. Early stage didn't seem to have overhired quite as much and fared a little bit better. And now it's from a demand perspective, hiring growth, we're seeing still more in early stage from my vantage point. And what's interesting is we're starting to see bigger companies request putting together RFPs, wanting us to do statements of works. Like it's starting to come back. But the conversation that I'm having with these executives at these companies are, well, look, we don't need you now. We're not going to be hiring in August, but we're thinking September, October, we're going to start to need to get back on track for growth. And we've cut so deep in terms of our internal organization that we're not ready really to support that growth. That's why we're having the conversation with you now. So we can get some kind of, you know, high level MSA in place. So when we just can't support the growth. So they're looking at flexible arms and in multiple areas of their business, different types of contractors and solutions to come in to support internal staff. Because I also think even though companies want to get back on track for growth, they don't necessarily want to add, you know, too much internal headcount. Like they're still worried about all the uncertainty. So they're thinking about technology, implementing AI and doing different things with vendors in order to, I think, have a little bit more flexibility with their costs. So it's very interesting right now. It's on the horizon. It seems like people are somewhat optimistic, but they're still incredibly tight on budget right now.
No, I totally agree. And I think maybe just starting at the public markets and working our way down, I think the reality is that, like, one, you're absolutely right. Different industry markets are going to feel this differently. Like my wife was formerly at Gap. And I think, you know, retail in general has been hit pretty hard. And so I think that candidly, like some of those companies have gone through multiple rounds of rifts. Like the reality is for most publicly traded software companies, no surprise that if you are a software company that is growing in today's market environment, like a Snowflake, for example, that you command a premium view of value, right? And so growth, despite challenging market environment, is really valuable. And the ability to do that while being profitable or generating cash flow is even more valuable, right? And so I think what you end up seeing is that, like, a lot of organizations ended up adjusting their organizational model and their cost structure to fit the kind of mold of how the market was valuing different businesses. We went from a market of growth at all costs. We weren't necessarily valuing or as critical of how efficient or what your burn looked like, even as a publicly traded company, to saying all of a sudden now we want to see responsible and healthy growth. And so I think a lot of companies were adjusting to fit kind of that new outfit, if that makes sense. And I think that as you head into Q3, Q4, what you're saying makes a ton of sense, because every leadership team, every executive team, boards are going to be sitting there and thinking about how are we feeling about growth, right? We probably went into 2023 planning saying, hey, 2022 was rough. we caught one on the chin. Let's be a little bit more proactive here. Let's have a more sober view as to what minimally constitutes success in a really tough economic environment. The macro data is not encouraging. Let's make sure that we are resourced for what we know we can achieve, that we're stretching for situations. We've got a stretch goal in terms of what is possible, but certainly going to require a lot of work. And as we're feeling more confident in execution and importantly, like, what is the growth curve look like heading into the next 12 months? And if we feel confident in that, then let's go ahead and start to think about what our headcount strategy looks like. So I would say that piece. On the private side, what I do think is interesting and something just for, I think for, you know, some of your listeners will have experiences because they've been working with private equity firms. But I think we're just coming out of an LPAC meeting where we present to effectively a board of our largest investors. And, you know, one of the things that we had highlighted in that session is kind of the resilience of private equity, right? dry powder is at record levels, over $1 trillion across balance sheets for private equity firms, right? There's a lot of dry powder that is eager and keen to be deployed. These
are quick for our audience tuning in that may not know what dry powder means. Could you provide a definition there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So dry powder is just capital available for investment. So it's equity capital available for investment. So there are a lot of firms out there that are, the punchline being is that there's a lot of money that's sitting on the sidelines that can and wants to be invested to help drive growth programs, to invest in product innovation, et cetera. And so I think as we start to see a bit of, you know, for companies that one are crushing it today or growing despite all of this challenge, they are getting money. Always been my thesis that if you're a good business showing great capital efficient growth, leadership or emerging leadership in a strategic segment of the market, you're showing great retention performance, there is capital available for you. and you're going to benefit from the supply demand imbalance. But I do think there's a lot of capital sitting on the sidelines that is waiting to be deployed. And so as we start to see, as confidence kind of picks up, and I think it's going to pick up, it's starting to pick up. But as that picks up more strong form in the second half of the year, I think you're going to see whether it's demands on services that you provide or other folks who are involved with the talent ecosystem just more broadly, I think you're going to see a lot more demand for that, you know, heading into end of 23, but certainly going to 2024.
Follow-up question, just what's going on in the public markets right now? We're seeing the market seems to be performing quite well. Looking at S&P and everything else, like it seems to be at a high, right? Like things seem to be going really well in terms of reflected in stock prices. One of my friends who's incredibly successful, built and sold a couple companies, CEO of a category leading cybersecurity company, mentioned that one of the reasons this possibly could be the case is these companies cut a lot of people. And as a result, their financials look pretty good as a result of making those cuts. And that could be boosting stock price. I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts on what's happening with stock prices right now and why the market seems to be doing so well.
Yeah, no, right? it's a great question. I'm no expert. So, you know, make my word with a grain of salt. It's just my POV. But I do think that, you know, I guess simplistically, it's psychology, right? And at the end of the day, I think it's a, you know, performance relative to expectations. And I think that what you ended up seeing is a number of companies in these indices that ended up outperforming even modestly their growth outlook and expectations that they had set with the street, outperform on profitability relative to what they were guiding to. And so I think when you see kind of consistent data points of outperformance relative to guidance or expectations, no surprise that we saw positive movement in broad indices, markets, et cetera. So I think that's probably what I would say contributed to that. I also think the second part of that too is probably, you know, a bit of a sigh of relief. We did see a small rate hike, but I think folks are growing a little bit, are building ease with some of the loosening of the belt a little bit from the Fed. So I think that's probably contributed to us as well, which is like some of it's macro, some of it's micro to some of the companies and how they're performing. And what is that telling us where demand is at potentially?
Well, I mean, like but from my perspective, I'd love for your help to understand this a little bit better. But I mean, the Fed just raised rates, I think, last week again. I mean, it seems like they're still tightening, raising rates. Are we really going to have a recovery when rates are so high? I mean, do they have to come down before we start to see companies start to invest in growth again? I mean, this to me, it seems just like another, for the tech industry a little bit, it just felt like with these more rate hikes, it's like we're getting kicked while we're down, right? I mean, it's already pretty tight out there. So I'm just wondering from your perspective, what, you know, from the Fed strategy and how interest rates are going to continue to impact the tech space over the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I'm no macroeconomist. Right. I would say, but it's a really good thought. And I think the reality from my perspective is that you got a bunch of rational actors that I think are sensitive to not doing anything too extreme on either side of it. And I think that they're seeing like I think tightening of policy is impacting perception, capital markets performance, cost of capital. I mean, we're seeing that across the private markets as well, right? I mean, you went from a market environment in 20 and 2021 where effectively capital was free to one where capital is quite expensive. If anybody's in the market to buy a house, you certainly are feeling that. So I think at the end of the day, I think the velocity of adjustments has certainly seemed to sober up a bit. I think the confidence that's building in performance and absolute performance is encouraging. And I think that's what's reflecting in the stock market is, I think, one, a reflection that the Fed are going to be rational actors and understand the delicate kind of line that they have to walk. But importantly, that companies, despite, you know, and I think it's helpful when you see kind of inflation come down, you see, again, consistency and kind of tight labor markets. Like, I think a lot of these things people are anchoring off and saying, perhaps there's not a lot of data points you can hang your hat on and saying, gosh, it's getting a lot better. But I think where folks are at is that it's not getting worse. And I think that that's certainly like the win that you kind of need, right? And I think you're seeing that evidenced in some of the confidence in the public markets. And so, I think, as you look at the data on the private markets, I started to interrupt you, but I think you're going to start to see that in the private markets as well, in terms of like capital deployed. Anecdotally, I've talked to a lot of, you know, good friends who are at different firms. And I think the consensus is investment committee or ICs are opening up. There's a lot more deals coming to committee that are being reviewed. And so I think that is, it's a positive trend line. So for folks on the line who are in the market looking to raise capital because you want to support growth programs, you're feeling confident in the growth line that you're seeing or acceleration you're seeing in a business, I think patience in terms of just, I think, continue to drive awareness with prospective investment partners. But I do think that, you know, patience will be rewarded. And I think heading into end of 2023, 2024, I think you're going to have a different reception if you are having those conversations.
So one point that you spoke to a little bit earlier, and I'd like to dive in a little bit more, is how VCs are thinking about selecting the right leaders for their portfolio, or possibly even evaluating which startups to invest in, and looking at folks that have possibly a better understanding of the financials of the company, understand things like unit economics and customer acquisition costs to lifetime value, and are looking at, are we able to scale in somewhat of a sustainable way, or do we see a path to profitability? In our prep call, we also talked about the importance of the J curve and how growth is compounding on a year-over-year basis. So I would love a little bit more insight there. And I think this also ties into not only how VCs and growth equity are looking at leadership, but what they, when they're sitting on the board, what they're expecting to see from leaders right now.
Yeah, I a lot to unpack there. I would say the two points I would call out, and I really enjoyed the conversation we had in advance of this session. But one is, I think a lot of boards and investors, when they look at their leaders, is they're looking for resilience, right? Ultimately, we've got great alignment. We're all aligned around in terms of like generating great equity outcomes for all shareholders. And the reality is that it's gotten harder to grow. But I think at the end of the day, are we thinking creatively as to where we're seeing opportunities and what we can do to take advantage of that? So for example, I think right now, if in fact discretionary spend on technology is contracted by some amount, what that tells us, or 8 out of 10 proposals sitting on a CFO's desk are going to go into a non-decision or defer on that RFP, what are we doing to earn the right to be in that category of 2 RFPs? Right. If we're in a situation where we are, you know, we've revised our growth forecast to that, say we are not underwriting to 75% year-over-year growth this year. We actually think that a much more responsible growth level or achievable growth target is 50% growth. What are we doing to operationalize confidence in achieving that outcome? Right. So for example, are we running, if we're feeling like our win rates are dropping, like are we seeing proactive intensity around pipeline coverage and just making sure we've got the right kind of shots on goal? Are we thinking critically around what we're doing on the retention side of the business in terms of ensuring that we are driving, we're fulfilling our commitments to driving impact for our customers, and we're staying ahead of potential renewal activity, driving, if new logo acquisition is getting much harder, what are we doing to drive expansion opportunities with existing client relationships where we have known success, where we've got a clear demonstration of value, we've demonstrated impact, we've got great evangelism, and championship with that relationship with that account. So I think that's what a lot of boards are looking at where their teams are. We've got exceptional leaders. We've got, if you look at the core of any software business, I'm of the opinion that very few companies, very software businesses have true IP. I think the IP sits within human capital and execution, right? And no surprise that, you know, do I think that some of the incumbents that are public software companies, do they have superior products? Maybe, you know, not, you know, I think that some entrepreneurs would say not the case, right? In different kind of discrete vertical markets that they play in. But what's exceptional about these organizations is they will out-execute you, right? They're absolute machines. And so I think that, I think what you're seeing from a lot of boards is like challenging teams to be great stewards of capital, to manage businesses to their P&L, right? We want to drive capital efficient growth. We want to make the right business decision. And then importantly, we're trying to be agile in terms of how we're adjusting strategy to take advantage of things that are working well, right? And trying to like shore up our businesses and make sure we've got no unlocked doors or windows as the storm is coming in, right? And I think that's what you're seeing, and making sure that we're talking about our positioning the right way, right? We're doing a great job in terms of driving stakeholder engagement outside of just the initial buyer within our organization. What are we doing to engage the entire C-suite if we are fighting for fewer and fewer budget dollars? So I think that's on that one dimension, that's what I think what boards are expecting of teams. And on the second piece, I think the other part of it too is, you know, I think boards are thinking, and this goes back to what you and I talked about, is opportunity cost. And I think that the example we had talked about is in a market where, you know, we are valuing profitable growth. You know, one example that I can call upon that I think is relevant is we're actively thinking through, it's harder to grow. We're seeing digital marketing programs, paid marketing programs get to a point of diminishing return or yield on every dollar, which may be fine. At the end of the day, growth is still very valuable, right? It allows us to invest, allows us to expand team. A dollar of cash on your balance sheet is worth a dollar, but a dollar of revenue could be worth multiples of that, right? And so growth is still very valuable. And so the example you and I, James, talked about is, I think there's a lot of challenging of teams, which is, can we build confidence in a J curve of investment? What does that mean? Meaning that even if we are leaning into programs that are showing diminishing efficiency, are there other things that we could be investing in, for example, in content marketing, that potentially allow us to hit the upswing on that J curve over time? So we have to embrace, we are prioritizing growth. We still believe that in the medium to long term, it is going to be efficient growth. We're going to have to stomach potentially some diminishing efficiency, but that's okay because growth is still valuable. And we have a plan in terms of our confidence, or how are we talking to our board, to our stakeholders about confidence in those investments over time being profitable investments that we can make to drive growth in our businesses. So I think you're seeing a lot of these types of conversations, whether it's in startups and scale ups, to ensure that the equity that, you know, leadership teams, employees, ICs hold is growing in value despite some of the challenges that we're facing.
Coming up on time here, AI right now, what's happening with ChatGPT, generative AI, is really changing the game, and it's impressing folks. And I think we're going to start to see a lot of companies are incorporating AI elements into their product offering, and a lot of new companies are coming into existence, solving problems in a way that is allowing companies to be a lot more efficient with their spend. I'm curious how you're seeing tech companies right now start to incorporate these technologies, and how it's, when you're talking about planning, growth, hiring, just general business operations, how are you seeing these technologies essentially being implemented or thought of as part of the roadmap?
That's a really good question. I would answer it from two facets. So I think one is, how do we leverage a lot of the innovation in LLMs and generative AI to like supercharge our existing solution offerings, deliver even more impact and value for our customers? And then two is, how do we use it to get better as a business, right? It's like, you know, I started taking a protein powder, and it's like that little supercharger, right? So I think every one of our companies, we're challenging them. And I think every company out there, every investor is challenging them in terms of, can we do more with less, right? But importantly, it's not about only doing more with less, but importantly, like, how can we redirect some of that OPEX, some of the investment resource that we have on things that drive incremental yield? We see that at Peakspan. There are things human beings can do. There are things that systems that don't sleep, don't require meals every single day, can do even better because they're doing it at the same level, if not improved efficiency, for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And so things that should be relegated to systems because systems are better to do it, let's try to identify those workflows, those initiatives and activities. Let's be wickedly good at process automation and building SOPs. And so we're challenging our teams to do that, because what I'd love to do is take that incremental investment dollar and try to figure out what growth programs can we put it into, right? Are there CS initiatives where we want to build out a technical account management team and want to invest in headcount there? Do we want to invest in new product innovation in the R&D and the product organization? Is there a gap on the leadership team? Right. I would love to identify better uses of that capital. If innovation can drive those opportunities, I welcome that. And I think a lot of folks do welcome that. On the other side, on the commercial side of it, there's a phrase that, you know, for one of our portfolio partners, Mindbridge, that focused on, you know, kind of the external audit use case, internal audit use case. One of the phrases that they shared with me that I thought was pretty powerful, which is AI is not going to replace auditors. Auditors using AI will replace auditors that don't.
Right.
Right. So it's that whole phrase of innovate or die. And it's obviously a pretty extreme example or phrase, but I think the reality is that our thesis has always been domain expertise, verticalization is always going to win. Right. And so I think that if you are intimately or hyper-focused on your ICP, understand who is your champion, the problem, you understand the technology infrastructure, you understand motivation and incentives, you understand organizational models, you understand pain points, you understand flow of work. And if you can incorporate generative AI, whether it's in a learning development application, a sales and marketing application, to supercharge and be able to deliver even greater impact with less friction and to really pull out those value levers for your buyer and the use cases that you solve, I think that only like makes you more indispensable in these types of market and allows you to have the opportunities to continue to grow your business. So we are challenging every one of our portfolio partners, which is how do we, on the spectrum of being commoditized and being the beneficiary of generative AI on the commercial side, how do we drive great self-awareness in terms of where this could be potentially harmful to our businesses and make sure we build moats around that? And importantly, what are great elements of our value proposition or the value levers available to us that we should take advantage of? So if you, for example, are a learning development company, what can we do to drive more intelligent automated content creation, for example, right? AI is really good at that. That doesn't need to circumvent what we're doing to create awesome tools for folks to create best-in-class content, but how can we reduce friction from that process, make it easier to consume our product, and deliver on the outcomes that we commit to our customers? So I don't know if that answers the question, James, but I think it's a multidisciplinary approach and one that is constantly evolving. But I do think that like one of the coolest parts of my job and why I love it so much is that you get to be a part of this rich tapestry of missions and visions, and every one of our companies touches thousands and thousands of end users and customers and their missions and impact. And so for us to be a part of that, for us to like identify innovation, support that from an investment perspective that drives impact for retailers, for mom and pop, you know, small coffee shops and hotels, that to me is pretty exciting. And I think that there's a lot of cool things that'll continue to come down the pike as a lot of this technology gets more mature.
I had a board meeting earlier today and we were discussing AI's impact on potentially my business and my customers. And so some interesting points came up that I can share here that I think will be valuable to the audience. We are looking at our strategic roadmap, looking at our 3-year plan, 5-year plan, and where we want to grow the company. And we're looking at how we're positioning our solution on the market and how this technology might actually require us to think about changing our value proposition and slightly changing the solution that we're providing. Because in some ways, the solution that we're providing to our customers are going to be impacted by generative AI. I mean, there's tools that are coming about which can slightly potentially like shorten the delta between high performing teams and low performing teams by providing this extra process and support. So there are certain things that we're looking at when it comes to revenue model, when it comes to value proposition. These aren't massive shifts at this point in time. We still see generally us going in the same direction for our value proposition and how we're thinking about delivering our solution. But we are starting to like become aware like how we need to pivot and tweak a little bit based on what the technology is doing and how can we potentially incorporate it for our own organizations and how can we essentially use this shift to benefit us and limit the potential risk of it to our solution. So we're starting to have these conversations and take them a lot more seriously than we might have, you know, a year ago, right? So it's definitely something that I'm starting to think about a lot more with our advisors than I possibly would have, you know, a year ago before everything came out with ChatGPT, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
For sure.
So, the cool part about that is that, like, you know, candidly, if you can leverage some of these things in job description creation, for example, very tactical example. But if that returns an hour of a team member's time on your team, that's now an hour focused on client services, right? On, you know, candidate curation, right? So it's like, it, I feel like every, it's like the whole concept of getting 1% better every single day. Potentially you can get 10% better in one day, right? So it's great that you're thinking about that. And I think a lot of your folks on the line are rightfully challenging themselves to think about how does their business, their value proposition, how they deliver for their clients evolve over the next couple of years. It'll be, it's exciting.
It really is. And in the recruiting tech space, some companies are working on some pretty crazy stuff. I mean, there's basically using generative AI and language models to actually do screening interviews, top of funnel interviews for candidates, to the point, getting it good to the point where it's going to be actually sort of difficult to distinguish between technology and people, right? To the point where it's like that good, right? And so there's things that people are thinking about doing. Now, who knows? I mean, maybe people looking for jobs are not necessarily going to want to engage with a company that's doing that. But I think it's like, I think that there's a way to do both. Like I see potentially companies offering, hey, you can have a recruiter screening with a screening call with our recruiter, or it's kind of like this self-serve, like maybe you don't want to talk to somebody yet. Maybe you can almost talk with this product solution, learn more about the company, ask your questions, do the screening call with the product, and then you can engage down funnel if you want to. So it maybe helps people, like they can just go directly on a careers page and boom, knock out a screening call without having to schedule with a recruiter, go back and forth and do that manual process. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it impacts people, organizations as well, because there's just so much application to drive efficiency. And I think a lot of people are saying like, well, the human touch, like, yeah, but there's sometimes where people just want things to go quickly and they don't want to wait. And they want like to just learn the things they need to learn about a potential employer or get the answers that they need to get around something with their benefits package. They don't want to wait for an HR business partner to respond, or if they want to learn about the professional progression or career pathing, you know, they only have a certain amount of time with a manager, having an additional resource available, opposed to like combing through a bunch of like, you know, resource documents, right, that are kind of tucked away. Okay. I think that there's just so many going to be interesting applications and for everything. And of course, on revenue side, right? I mean, the applications on the revenue, sales, marketing is going to be insane.
I totally agree. And I think I've been investing in HR tech for almost a decade and a half now. And I think the, without getting into a philosophical debate, I do think that the consciousness of AI is going to be one that has to be top of mind, particularly with anything touching people. We were early investors in the digital interviewing category with a business called HireVue, which is kind of the pioneer in that space. And I think there are areas where, you know, we're going to be able to like hit the gate running with Gen AI and some of these applications, and other areas where, you know, it's going to be a crawl, walk, then run. But importantly, I just think it's, to your point, it's going to supercharge people, organizations, folks on the front lines, driving impact in terms of what organization models are, how they're evolving. But two is, I think it's just going to make, particularly for large organizations where you're collaborating with the engineering team and the marketing team, and the sales team, and you've got different co-collaborators in those processes, how do you make it more efficient, right? How do you make sure that you are, one, being thoughtful in terms of how you're deploying and using, you know, your organization's time, because that has a cost associated with it. But two is, you know, leveraging technology and data points that candidly you and I and a lot of these organizations may not have purview into, because, you know, these AI systems collecting so much data that aid the process for candidate qualification, you know, and the like, right? So it's going to be cool, because I do think that it's going to have a pretty palpable impact in terms of people operations too, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, across the board, I'm excited and a little anxious about it as well. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. I'd say a little bit more on the excited side, but it's you know, it's something that I'm thinking both ways. It's like, how do we use this and make sure that we're on the side that benefits this, right? Which I think is it's important to be thinking about. I think a lot of times it depends through the lens. You have to look at it like in terms of potential threats, in terms of how you're delivering your solution to the market, and then potential benefits in terms of how you can optimize. And I think companies are, you know, probably smart ones are thinking about both. But anyway, Sunkit, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate your expertise. Likewise. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, James. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course. So for everybody tuning in, make sure to take this episode, drop it in Slack channel, share it with your teams. A lot of valuable insight here that can help guide talent strategy, executive strategy, business strategy. And really exciting. I actually can officially announce now that Greenhouse has partnered with the Breakthrough Hiring Show. The co-founder and CEO, Daniel Chait, is going to be coming on a quarterly basis to be a co-host on the show. It's going to be freaking incredible. He's going to be bringing on a strategic guest as well. I mean, we're talking about the top executives in the world are going to be joining us on this show. So we're continuing to level up, add more value to you. And I love hearing from everyone. So if you have any feedback, if you have any guest suggestions, topics that you'd like for us to discuss, or just want to say hi, make sure to reach out to me on LinkedIn, DM me. I have an open profile and I'd love to connect with you there. Anyways, thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a three-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.